You're listening to KDVS Davis 90.3 FM. This has been the Family Guy musical review and an impromptu musical stylings of DJ Circuit Breaker.
Yes, it has been. So I'm going to really quickly go over the last couple songs we just played. So we played most recent to least recent. We played So What by Pine Grove. This is a song. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Interesting. It's very quiet on there.
Mm-hmm. I can hear you through my headphones.
Oh, okay, cool. My friend actually just showed me that song yesterday, and I've been listening to it like on repeat. So, just hoping you guys enjoy that as well. And before that, we played Humans by Big Thief.
Wait, we had Turkey Vultures Wednesday off their album Rat Saw God.
Exactly. Yes. And then before that was Humans by Big Thief, and.
Before that, we had a song by Black Country New Roads.
Athens, France by Black Country New Road. And then before that, we played Ingadar by Adrian Lenker. And before that, we played Place to Be by Nick Drake.
Yes, we did.
So thanks again, everybody, for tuning in.
Hopefully the Family Guy musical review will return in 2 weeks from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., hopefully a little bit more thought out. More Family Guy next time. But I kind of like the musical parts after.
Me too. Yeah.
Fun. Maybe it'll be a little hybrid show. But coming up next, we have America China Talk. Yeah. Stay tuned if you'd like for that. And hope everyone enjoys. Yeah.
Thank you guys
for tuning in.
Bye.
The following views presented in this hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. You are about to hear America China Talk. Sorry for the technical difficulties. Give us 1 second.
Welcome our guest, Ethan Kranovich from UC Davis. Hi, Ethan. Thank you for coming on the show.
Hi, Mrs. Ye. Glad to be here. Glad to be getting back into school.
Great. So, Ethan, why don't you tell us about yourself a little bit? What's your major and your background? Anything you'd like to tell us?
So, I'm a Chinese major in my last year. I'm a returning student. So if, there are transfer students out there, or people who are coming back to Davis after some time, I have some, advice that I could give about my own experience coming back and getting back in the groove of things. I will be acting as the Chinese major peer advisor this year. So I'll be having my office hours in Sproul Mondays from 12 to 1 tentatively. So you can always find me there. Apart from school, I work part-time. I'm part of the ping pong club. Would be happy to see you there if you want to learn how to play or if you already play. In the rest of my free time, usually either drawing, reading, watching movies, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So why did you decide to major in Chinese? A lot of our majors in East Asian languages and cultures are double majors.
Mm-hmm.
But in your case, this is your only major, right? That is.
Yes.
So can you tell us about what you like about this major?
So it's kind of funny. People ask me, especially the Chinese teachers, like, what made you major in Chinese? And the answer I've given, which is not entirely accurate, is that I thought it would be easier than what I was studying before, because after taking some time away from college, I was not sure I could do it again. Right. I was very apprehensive about coming back. Throughout COVID, people were encouraging me to take the online classes, get back in the groove of things. And then finally, I was just like, I think I can do this. I feel better about myself now. My original major was physics. So continuing that, being in my third year of physics already after a number of years, just didn't seem feasible. So I basically started from scratch with Chinese. One of my inspirations for choosing Chinese rather than anything else, it was a personal reason. I live with my aunt. In my mom's family, the aunt is the oldest one. My mom is the youngest of six. So my aunt's more like my grandma, but she doesn't speak English. And when I was living with her, we could communicate, but it was pretty difficult, and it never got beyond, you know, simple things. So I felt a little bit of regret that half of my family, the side that lives in Taiwan, I wasn't able to relate to them properly. So that was one of the reasons that Chinese seemed like something that would be worthwhile.
So how do you like the major now that you've taken many courses? Because most of these courses deal with Chinese literature, history, and culture. What do you think of these courses?
Well, from the language side, I think it's invaluable because I get to communicate with a whole nother population of people. And we're going to touch on that when we talk about the trip to China, being in Taiwan too. I mean, there's literally 1.5 billion, I think, Chinese. It's the most spoken language in the world, last time I checked. Right. So that opens a lot of possibilities in terms of communicating with people. But apart from that, the history of China, all of this has personal relevance too. I mean, my grandfather was in Taiwan during Japanese occupation. He actually learned to be a doctor from Japanese, doctors. And my family, my mom, my aunt, and then my uncles and my other aunt also moved to the States to study. And then my mom and my aunt and my other aunts settled down here. So all of that history is relevant because it goes back a few generations, and it gives me this perspective of what they went through, because we don't learn any of that in our normal education, public education, K through 12, right?
Yes. Yeah. So to switch from a physics major to a Chinese major, do you feel your background in science helps you understand Chinese history and culture better?
I wouldn't say there's much connection. The thing with physics is I didn't know exactly what I wanted to study going into college at the beginning. And I had done pretty well in a physics class in high school. And I was like, you know what? I can write my essays about this. And then I got in and I did it. But I was feeling disillusioned going through that because it's a lot of numbers. It's up in your head. And when I think about my last 2 years here at Davis studying Chinese, it's about people, it's about stories, it's about narratives. And that is just a huge difference from thinking about a ball rolling down a hill, right? Mm-hmm. Science has application, but at the end, it's not that it doesn't have a soul, but the human element is not always there mm-hmm. with numbers and geometry and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. And you spent sometime this summer as an intern in China at Jiangnan University, which is in the city of Wuxi in Jiangsu province. So I really like to hear about your experience being in China for the first time, right?
Yeah, so I have been to Taiwan before that, visiting family. I worked in my uncle's company a couple summers. But I actually haven't even left the country outside of a trip to Mexico for my friend's wedding for like a decade, right? This is when I was real young going over there and living with my uncle. But China is, it's kind of struck me as this very developed society, but it's developed very quickly. Taiwan is, you know, I'd say they industrialized a little earlier, or it just feels like things have been there for longer. When you walk into Shanghai and you're walking around, all these high rises, they look fresh, right? They're not caked over with dirt or anything. So China has this real big momentum that you can feel throughout their society. And like Wuxi, for example, is one of the developing cities in the area. It's in between Nanjing and Shanghai, right? And you can see that everybody's scrambling to basically secure a place in that structure. And there is a sense of excitement there, because it seems like there's just all this possibility in these smaller cities that are actually becoming extremely high tech. There are a lot of differences, and these are things that probably only exist in China too. Like, China is a cashless society, right? You use your phone to pay for everything. You use your phone for everything, and actually even on the phone, you're probably only using Alipay and WeChat for everything, because they have these mini apps built within the main app that allow you to order food, call a taxi, pay for your subway ride. So it's really interesting how things have developed over there compared to how we have it here. Because you go to Taiwan, it's like you're using Google, you're using these other products, but everything in China is like, you know, Guonei, it's like their own version of things. So at once it's a culture shock, but it's also extremely interesting to see how they've approached like this kind of technological advancement.
Yeah, I mean, I am concerned about going to China on my next trip because I don't have any of these apps that people use every day in China. So I don't know, for tourists, is that going to be a problem?
I definitely, there is a barrier to entry. I think having basic Chinese is important for travel in China. Most people are not going to speak with you in English. They might not even know any English. Even the students I was talking to, their English is they're a little bit more hesitant to speak it. I think in Taiwan, people are more open to trying their English out, whereas in China, people are a little bit more reserved about it. So the payments, like getting a bank account, getting a phone number, all these things, if you can manage to get all of that set up, maybe with the help of somebody local, then traveling there is a joy. I mean, you can go do anything you want, pretty much. But the initial barrier to getting set up is pretty high, and I need help from people.
I see. Okay, so I will keep that in mind. So you mentioned even students there who study English, who can speak English, are kind of reserved, kind of shy about using it. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us what you did as an intern at Jiangnan University?
Yeah, so first night I got into Shanghai Airport and they had a driver pick me up. He ran kind of like this taxi service company. He personally came to pick me up and we were talking in the ride in Chinese. I don't think he could speak any English pretty much. So I was like actually having a good time talking to him, but there was a lot of things he was saying that were difficult to address. He had things to say about American politics and the perception of America outside of America. And this is coming from a local person, probably not like a master's PhD student or something that has maybe a more global perspective. So that was interesting, as my first interaction in China was with this driver. But then when I got there, two volunteer students were waiting for me. It was Ricky and Emily. So their names were Fuxing and Tingyan, and they were really friendly. Immediately, they're speaking English to me, and they're trying to help me out and, you know, get me set up in the dorm. This was late at night too. This is probably like 11 p.m. that they're waiting out there for me. Probably been waiting the whole day. So of the students I met, especially Fuxing, he was very engaged with English. He wanted to speak, and his English was good. You know, we see international students come to Davis. And I'd say he has the same capacity for English as any of those students that I met, right? But I did notice in the classes, some students are extraordinarily shy. They might be able to read and write and do test answers, but when it comes to conversational language, I think they might be a little bit hesitant because of maybe an accent or pronunciation or saying things wrong and not wanting to be perceived as saying it incorrectly. So I think the reason for that is there's less opportunity for them to practice speaking English. They can definitely read books a lot and all that, And this is something that I've experienced learning a language too. The speaking is a spontaneous thing. You meet somebody, you start talking. It's hard to practice it. One thing I've been doing is when I'm reading a book in Chinese, I'll try to read it out loud to make sure everything makes sense when I hear it. And that's something I would recommend to people learning languages too. But I do think, yeah, the shyness in the students is something that kind of eases once they get to know you a little bit better. Once we were going out and playing ping pong with some of these people, and one of them at first were only speaking Chinese, and then he's like, "Hey, I want to." He's not an English major. He was a master's in political ideology, right? Mm-hmm. And he wanted to speak English to me, and he still WeChats me in English. Like last week, we were talking, and we switch, right? Sometimes I'll message him in Chinese and he'll reply back, and then it switches to English and then back. So I think breaking down those first kind of like, hey, I'm not going to judge you. Wherever your English is at, I'm going to try to understand and work with you on that. Right. It's definitely it's a two-way street because I can use Chinese to explain things for them as well.
Do you correct each other? So in other words, you correct his English and he corrects your Chinese.
It's like sometimes the conversation will start because of that. It's like, hey, did I say this phrase right? And I'll be like, no, actually, funny thing is this guy that I was playing ping pong with, he's studying Marxism, right? But we were talking about slang, and I don't want to repeat it on the air, but there's just like one word of difference can change the entire meaning. And it would be extremely difficult to explain that in solely English to him. So I'm using Chinese to kind of help him understand what the difference is between this slight variation in slang, right? So it's definitely, we're both making mistakes and we don't want to point it all out. It interrupts the flow of the conversation. But if it seems relevant enough or it's something like, whoa, that's the wrong idea, then we definitely want to address that as it goes. And there's one thing, this guy Jack that was at UC Davis, he's a law student, he came from Beijing. I met him playing ping pong last year, and he would always use this emoji with this grimacing face. It's the teeth that's kind of like in a straight line. But he thought it was like the WeChat emoji that has a grinning face because the teeth looks kind of similar. So he was using it as a happy emoji, and I asked him, Jack, what are you trying to say with that emoji? And he's like, oh, it's like the WeChat one. I'm like, no, it's the complete opposite meaning. It means you're like offended by the situation. So something like that that's kind of fun to explain is also definitely a way to keep that conversation going.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of communication, sometimes, you know, you have to sort of talk to one another about cultural differences, right? Do you feel that it's hard to communicate with people there, given that their lifestyle there, or quote unquote ideology, is so different from what we're used to here?
No, I think all the politics is actually fairly far from the people that you meet. The mm-hmm. people that you meet are just like us. They're playing games in class. They're doing all sorts of stuff, going out. They have something called an escape. It's like the escape room China version is, I think, I haven't been to one in the States, but I don't think the one that they had in China could exist in the States because it was really scary. But this is the kind of stuff they do for fun, right? Me and a couple students went out to see A Quiet Place. It's the prologue one where the aliens land on Earth. And they really loved it. I was like, I've already seen the first movies. I thought those are better, but they have the same interest as us. And of course, they might not have the same exposure to media that we do. But regardless, they're just, the people I met are just students living normal lives and trying to get through their studies, right? So there was a lot of, I think the empathy was there. We saw eye to eye in every situation. Mm-hmm.
That's good to know, especially young people. I think it's relatively easy for young people to get along and to talk. Do you find that there's something they're most curious about in terms of America, like how you live as a student, or I don't know?
This is kind of tragic, but it came up multiple times. And actually, the driver is one of the first things he asked me. He said, "Is it true that everybody in America has a gun?" And I told him, you know, gun violence is certainly a problem in America. But like for me, I don't have a gun. I don't think I'll ever have a gun. I live in California, where it's less likely the people you meet are going to have a gun. It's not that it doesn't happen, but it's not like a different state that's all about gun rights. So that impression that people had of America seemed a little bit skewed towards the negative, which is unfortunate. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry. I just kind of lost track. I went off.
That's okay. Yes, I think that's a fairly common perception of Americans outside the country. They think Americans are into guns.
You know, I will say something, though. I heard about the assassination attempt on Trump and also Biden stepping down to let Kamala Harris run for presidency. Both of one of them I found out in China from Fu Xing. He told me, "Did you hear the news?" I was like, "What news?" And he told me, and I was like, "Why am I hearing this from you first? I'm American, right?" And then the other one, my friend in Taipei, said, "Hey, did you hear the news about Biden?" I was like, "What?" And he told me, and it's like, maybe it's me that's the problem. I'm so out of the loop, and these people are keeping track of these things better than I am. So that was a little surprising.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I think in general, young people in this country do not really keep up with world affairs. Right,
there's so much going on that it's hard to get enough information, because our schedules are so full already, right? And we have access to like almost an infinite amount of information that we could look into, so to be able to parse that is difficult.
Mm-hmm. Did you visit any Chinese families while you're there?
So no families. Because I was mainly on campus.
Yes.
So I was hanging out with the volunteer students and basically anybody I met through ping pong. Because they had a gym, I'd just go over there and maybe see somebody, challenge them to play. I made some friendships that way. But no, I didn't meet any families in China. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see. So you also spent some time in Taiwan this summer?
Yes.
Your trip to China. Now, been to both places, do you have any comparison? I mean, obviously, you're much more familiar with Taiwan than with China, but still, now that you have lived in China for 4 or 5 weeks, what do you think?
This is a pretty difficult question. I think as far as Taiwan goes, I've already been there and I've spent extended periods of time there in the past, where I got comfortable. But the change with Taiwan was that I was better at Chinese this time. So I had much more freedom to go out on my own and communicate with people. And then I have one friend in Taipei who was willing to keep coming out and meeting me, which is, I don't know, he must have liked hanging out with me or something, but he doesn't really speak English either. So having Chinese, approaching fluency in Chinese was something that opened the door in Taiwan and in China as well. China, on the other hand, is the society or the way that things are laid out, just like what I mentioned with the apps and the payment systems, it's so different that it's really exciting to try to figure everything out and see how things work. Because Taiwan's actually, everything's cash and nothing feels like a huge culture shock in Taiwan. I think Taiwan feels a little bit like Japan too. I went to Japan a couple of years ago and I think Taiwan has a little bit of that, that Shibuya effect or Shinjuku Plaza effect, where it's like there's just stuff everywhere. China definitely seems like this more chaotic place where everything was built really well, but really fast. So the pace of life and the way that people move around, like cars won't stop for you in a crosswalk and you have to kind of keep going. Things like that. I think we're more exciting in a sense. Taiwan felt familiar to me, but China was like this whole new concept.
Mm-hmm. Are these two places similar? Because obviously they're both Chinese culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
But of course they have very different histories. What do you think? Do you think they're more similar or different? culturally speaking?
I think somebody mentioned this, and my aunt said this to me. I sent her a picture of China, which was the Bund at Shanghai, their kind of pier area looking over all the high rises. And then I sent her a picture of Taipei when I had gotten into the main station, and I just took a picture of the street. And she said, wow, China looks, the skies are so gray, and it looks so colorful in Taiwan. But actually, I think that's kind of accurate, but not in a good or bad way. Mm-hmm. I like the gray skies in China, right? I like that it's kind of dry. And actually, I'm partly colorblind, so I'm not sure I notice everything anyways. But I like overcast days. That's the kind of person I am, right? So that representation of gray skies and bright sun, I think, is good if you don't try to turn it into a good or bad thing.
Mm-hmm. I see. So what was your deepest impression of China?
Shanghai was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I really think the people I met at the university, the students I met, that's the memories that are going to keep going. And I have them added on WeChat. They're free to contact me. I'll ask them questions about China. And I don't know if you remember Gao. Mm-hmm. I forgot what the tones are on his name. But he's back in, I think he went south to study anthropology, but he was studying in Beijing, right? But I still message him all the time too. Actually, I think his English was one of the best mm-hmm. of any of the international students that I met at Davis. I like his, because he gets the, when I'm asking a question, he gets exactly what I'm asking, which is good. It's analytical, and it's looking deeper into what I'm actually saying. But yeah, all the people I met in China, and the friend that I had in Taipei, and my relatives, those are really the most important experiences that I had from the whole trip.
Yes. Would you like to go back to China?
Absolutely. And they asked me, when are you coming back? And they said, next time you're here, I'll take you to Beijing or whatever. Definitely want to go back. I'm applying for Fulbright Taiwan, mm-hmm. right? This is something that's happening in the next couple of weeks here. Just wrapping things up. But if I do end up in Taiwan for a year, I do want to have the possibility of doing the same kind of thing in China if time and availability permit.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If you spend a year in Taiwan, I guess it'll be easy for you to travel to China, different parts of China, since this time you only spent weeks in that particular area. Right. And China is so vast that you get to see different parts. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and in comparison, Taiwan is so small, especially Taipei is very small.
Taiwan is very bustling with energy, though. It doesn't matter where you are. Even in Miaoli, this is a smaller town that my mom's from. Right, I was staying at our grandfather's old house. But it's still got so much stuff going on that's small. It's very condensed. And even though the land area of Taiwan isn't very big, but the population density is really high, especially in the big city. So it's there's more than enough to do in Taiwan. But I think China, as this massive country that has all these developments going up and everything's moving really fast. I forget how many years they took to create their high-speed rail system, but it wasn't much at all. So it's pretty inspiring in a way. It's kind of daunting also to see this kind of this different, it's a country of over a billion people, right? So it really does reflect that when you go there.
That's interesting. So I really want to thank you, Ethan, for coming on the show. Any last word about China based on your experience?
I think the Chinese tacky ping pong rubbers are really cool. If I hadn't gone to China, I don't think I would have used the DHS Neo that I put on my old paddle. And I think I'm going to stick with it. Those tacky rubbers, I had to do a lot of research to figure it out, but you can really feel it. They have more grip and spin potential. And watching the Olympics too was super exciting. It was a close match in the men's groups. It was the finals was China versus Sweden, and it was super good, super entertaining.
Yes, that's great. That's great. So again, thank you, Ethan. I want to thank Ethan Kranovich for appearing on our show today and what he said about China and Chinese major. Everything is just so interesting. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in, and please do come back next month.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello. This is DJ Corla with East Meets West. Welcome. Sorry about that. If you are a first-time listener, this show is dedicated to highlighting musicians and music from the Middle East, South Asia, and surrounding regions, as well as their diasporas. Today's theme is folk music from the Middle East and South Asia. I try to include a fair variety, but as with any venture, it's impossible to encapsulate the entirety of the diversity of folk music that is available within these regions, as these regions are so vast and so diverse, with so many language groups and ethnic groups and cultural traditions. So I hope that the small snapshot that I provide, that I have been able to provide you with into these regions, educates you a little more and piques your interest in the music of these regions. Either way, thank you so much for tuning in. This is East Meets West, and we'll get started with the first track. Thank you.
তোমার দয়া বিনে গুরু, তোমার দয়া বিনে গুরু, চরণ সাধব কি মতে, লগ সুপথে গুরু দোহাই তোমার মনকে আমার ল
লগ সুখতে